Greetings in the precious name of Jesus this afternoon. It's a privilege to be gathered here with you. I'm not sure how much of a privilege it is to be up here. I think this is probably the most difficult assignment I've ever been tasked with. Brother Leland came into my office one day and was just feeling me out, I thought, about the idea of having somebody come and talk about, study into this and come and talk about the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare and some of these issues we face. And I was in favor of that. I thought that was a good idea. And I don't remember at what point it dawned on me that his mission was, I don't know if it changed in there somewhere, but I caught on that this was coming to an assignment, and it got a little less comfortable. I really appreciate those opening thoughts. And the thing that's beautiful about Old Testament scriptures and stories is that there's truth in there that just, you know, we think of the Old Covenant and how things have passed away, but God and His nature just pass on. And God is, it gives us this picture of God. The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show Himself strong. To show Himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is perfect toward Him. And I believe that. And I believe that is the basis for following God's way and in issues as we face them. In the subject of Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act, I'm going to go through some, I guess, honestly, there isn't as much, as big as the bill is, the act, as much has been written about it, as much as it is in the news, there isn't really that much substance for us here today in the bill itself. We have some things to look at. But I'd also like to encourage us to think in the way we think about it. And there's some concepts I feel are underlying that we need to have grounded as it relates to health. God created the body for life. Genesis 1 and 2. That's a fact we touched on this morning. Secondly, that the body is in degeneration because of the original sin, and we are destined to die. And those are facts that I think it's important for us to keep in mind as we think about the whole subjects of health and life, insurance, and so forth. Third, God is a healer. God, it's a miracle, and it's a conundrum in a way, that while God allowed death, He built this healing into our body, and He is still healing, and He can even, we see, miraculously heal outside of the natural course that He has created. And God is a healer, and I think we see in that His desire for Himself to be glorified in this healing. And we also see that in the ministry of Christ. You know, Christ, His ministry here was to preach the kingdom of heaven. But in it, He left a path of healing, of physical healing. I think we see the heart of God in that. We see Christ's compassion. And I think we also, that word compassion means moved with compassion. And we see it in Christ so often. He saw these and he was moved with compassion. He didn't just feel bad about it. He felt it. What that actually means is you feel it in the gut. If you look back to the root of that word, it means you feel it and it moves you to do something. And it uses that term sometimes in the King James Version. It's a very accurate translation that he was moved with compassion. And I believe that I think this is important. I believe that Christian people, as followers of Christ, we have this. It has the same effect on us when we see brothers in need. I think that's an underlying concept here we need. Also that God can use physicians to fulfill his purpose in healing. The theme of this afternoon is another aspect I think is important to look at, and that there are threats to brotherhood sharing. That's real. And at the risk of getting into Brother Peter's topic tonight on biblical basis and practice for brotherhood assistance, I'd like to look at a few verses in Acts as a springboard. Acts 2, verse 42, we're going to start there. I'm going to just read verse 42 first. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship and in the breaking of bread and in prayers. Now, Brother Nolan, in our minister's session yesterday afternoon, said he had his thoughts prepared before that. Now, this, I'm going to also make a disclaimer. When I was reading this morning, and we spent a lot of time discussing fellowship, the meaning of the word fellowship, and how it relates to us yesterday, probably more time than what I'm not sure. It was good time. It took a lot of time. I'd like us to see something here. This is the springboard of the church. I'm doing a little segue here, but it's just the scenic route as we're driving by. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship. There's a commonality that brings fellowship. And I guess in a way maybe we were all saying that. But there is a bottom line. And I guess just a word of caution, and I guess I thought about it last night, but I don't know if I couldn't get a word in edgewise or didn't say it when I had the opportunity. But tolerance. Let's be careful with that word, tolerance. I'm all for accepting brothers of like faith. But there is a group in America that push an alternative lifestyle and a lot of other subversive activities that go with it and are accompanied. And that is their cry, is tolerance. And they put it in they're waving it in the faces of people and saying, why can't we just have tolerance? I will also say that by and large, the Christian church in America has responded wrongly to that. And I guess my plea in this segue is let's have fellowship, not politics. Okay? Let's not get caught in that, on either side of that. Because people, as subversive as they are God, they are God's people. Okay, now back to my subject. And fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done by the apostles. And they believed, and all that were believed and had all things in common, and sold their possessions and goods, and parted them to all men, as every man had need. And they continued daily with one accord in the temple, and the breaking of bread from house to house, did eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart. And they had all things in common. And I think there was more than just, I don't think this was just physically in common. They had things in common. And they sold their possessions and gave as every man had need. Now, if you go to Acts 3, we could go into that, how they met a man and he was lame and they met his needs. He was asking for money and they met his health needs. Let's go to Acts 4. I'd just like to read verse 34 and 35. Neither was there any among them that lacked. For as many as were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the prices of all the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet. And this distribution was made unto every man according as he had need. Now there's two principles brought out in these passages that I think are underlying. And we need to cap before we go on. As a brotherhood, it says that in verse 34, neither was there any among them that lacked. And it says they brought it together and shared as they had need. And that is that's the crux of a brotherhood working together. It's not figuring out who's better off. It's not figuring out how to keep my stuff from other people. It's helping brothers. I'd like us to keep that in mind as we go on. The Affordable Care Act, also known commonly as Obamacare, is a response to a real and complicated issue. It's a response to a real and complicated social problem in America. With health, especially with health care. You know, the same could be said for Social Security. And that came in years ago. That was especially for old age, and secondarily, as I understand, it included medical coverage for the elderly and disabled. Now, what's fascinating to me, as I look at this legislation, and also if you go back, you know, actually America has been very poor on health care as a providing it, because we're not socialistic. We're capitalists. And I'm just using this as just including us and the Americans because we're influenced by it. I know this is the other kingdom. That's you take Venezuela. Socialist. They have a healthcare system that's modeled. Cuba. It's communist. Has a health care system. It provides health care that's modeled by 78 other countries. And America had a problem with health care because capitalism promotes selfishness. And we were neglecting the poor in America. And so we tend to demonize this legislation, but actually it was in the government's place to do that. They were dealing with real and complicated issues. But let me go back to my point here. Every one of these is a copy of what we read in Acts. It's not the real thing. The church. And that's why we are naturally a bit suspicious when our government starts down this road, is because we feel we're going to be the potential to be drug into a copy rather than the real. Because we believe from our heart, unless we've been influenced by this capitalistic society we live in, we believe that brotherhood sharing is right. As I already mentioned, the situation with the Affordable Care Act is dynamic, it's fluid, it's changing. They're still writing the laws. You can look up the bill online. In fact, there's at least four different versions, and if you look it up online, you make sure you get the one that passed or it's meaningless. I think I have the name of it here somewhere. But even then, there's a lot of interpretation of what it means and how it's going to work out and how the law is going to be written and various interpretation of that. And I tried to avoid the words likely and probably and possibly and potentially. And when you avoid those, you don't have much left. A few more concepts before we get into what I did find. I already mentioned that demonizing the law, the politicians, the government for this is not acceptable behavior for a Christian. God ordained a government in Romans 13:1. And they were attempting to address real problems in healthcare, the system that it really wasn't working. We were facing some of the same challenges: the rising health costs, the rising insurance costs because of the rising health costs, and how they played on each other. It became almost a money laundering system. The insurance company had limits. So if you went over, say, $250,000, so they weren't insurance companies are sharing pools, and they have to mitigate the risk. So they can put a cap of $250,000 on, and then they don't get the worst ones, those million-dollar bills. They can mitigate those risks because they were doing business, which is understandable. From our capitalistic minds, they did not accept pre-existing conditions. And so, you think about this, they were looking at this, and what they really wanted was the copy. They wanted to cover the poor. They wanted to cover those that couldn't afford insurance. And they wanted, and this is where the news has definitely demonized our current administration. They wanted the ones that have plenty to share with those that didn't. The world system requires a bottom line. It has to. They have to come to the assumption that everyone's selfish by nature and are only going to give what they have to and get everything they can. That is the assumption they have to go on. That is where it becomes the antithesis of the model of Acts. I'll try to give a skeleton of the act as it relates to this theme. I'm not going to try to tell you how much your taxes are going to go up, what all your exemptions are. But as it relates to, well, I guess what I was looking for is information on how it relates to our view of insurance. The House passed their Affordable Health Care for America Act is number H.R. 3962. Don't even write that down because it's not in effect anymore. In October of 2009. On December 24th, 2009, just before Christmas, the Senate passed the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Then the House abandoned their bill. And through an act of reconciliation, accepted the Senate's bill. And that became the Health Care and Education Reconciliation Act of 2010. And and they're still working on writing the law. The law's out, the details of those out. It won't be done probably even as it's getting implemented, they're behind. I'd like to look at basically four things that we should probably understand about it. There's there's a lot of, actually from a business point of view, it'd do good to just look up a summary of what all was done. Because especially if all you've read is conservative news, you would get the idea that all they're trying to do is get at people's money. They were trying to limit insurance companies from the rate of raising rates. And of course, that's why the insurance companies in the last couple of years raised all the rates quick before they come under those limits. So there's ways around those things, but they're insisting that insurance companies cover. There's no limits. And there's a lot of legislation to protect the consumer from insurance companies. And also to educate and try to get health care cheaper. There's a lot of thought went into that. Whether it works or not isn't our job to decide, probably. But it is amazing how much thought actually went into. It should be for 1,000 pages. And I would like to just, as a disclaimer, I did not read all the pages. I've read some of it. I did not wade through it all. So one of the things is that they're setting up insurance exchanges, and they're encouraging all the states to set them up, although there is a federal insurance exchange if there is no state exchange. And I looked up, I believe Oregon I know has one, I believe Washington, Idaho, Colorado, I tried to find the places where the churches were represented here. All those states do have their own insurance exchange, or they're developing it, I should say. They don't have the law to know what they're supposed to operate under, so it's not fully done. But they are all working on that. In that, Americans cannot pay more than 12% of their income or less than 1.5%. So, on health and in the health insurance exchanges. Now, that's quite a variation, I realize. But it's there's a graduating scale based on your income. And Americans can go by private insurance. They don't have to buy in exchanges. The exchanges probably will be higher priced insurance because that's where the high risk people are going to get their insurance. It's going to be a graduating scale based on income. A family of four, as long as their income is under, I think I have a transposition here. I think it's 92,000 something. I have 94,000 something. But as long as it's under 92,000, and it's with every child it goes up, I think for a family of six, like mine is 132,000. As long as it's under that, there's substantial government subsidies to purchase insurance. That's their program. Okay. In fact, for a family of four, it's projected that the cost, now I'm using a probably here, this is a projected cost, I just want to note that an inclusive plan would go from $8,500 a year to $17,000 without that subsidy. So just, if you can understand the cost to consumers of this, if you're a family of four and your income goes to $93,000, then you're responsible for $17,000 a year instead of $8,500. I don't see everyone running for that bargain yet. Secondly, there is a health care insurance mandate, and we've heard about that. That's been discussed. It went through the appeal to the Supreme Court, whether that should stick or not. But everyone, it did, and everyone is required to have health insurance that meets the requirement of the AFA or pay a penalty, except there's some exemptions. But it did stick that there will be a penalty. And what are the penalties? And that starts in for the tax year 2014. So if you don't have some provision in the tax year 2014, or for at least there's a gap exemption of up to 90 days. So you have to have some provision for at least 10 months or at least a little over 9 months of 2014 or there will be penalties. And those would be deducted from your refunds of 2015. It starts out for individuals $95 or 1% of your income. And goes up to $695 and 2.5% of your income, whichever is greater of those numbers, by 2016. And for families, by 2016, it's $2,085. That's the minimum fine, or 2.5% of your income, whichever is greater. But the tax cannot exceed the amount of the bronze plan on the exchanges, which is about a $12,500 plan. So that's currently the max, but that's a floating number. So those are the penalties. Interestingly, just an interesting thought. I've heard the question before, and the whole question of Social Security exemption and whether you should be or shouldn't be, and who qualifies and who doesn't, and the question is raised, well, would you be Social Security exempt if it cost you? Well, unfortunately, this is not, I don't know if it's unfortunate or not, this isn't going to bring us to that decision, because there are some exemptions. And that is the next thing I want to look at. There are two built-in exemptions that there are others as far as poor, low income. There are some exemptions. I think like a family under 30,000 is actually covered without doing anything, basically. I mean, there was probably something to sign up for, but it's basically a covered medical. But if you want to look at the bill in this section, it's subtitle F, section 1501, part D. So it's subtitle F, section 1501, part D, or you can search for religious conscience exemptions. And I am not going to read their writing. I'm going to read my summary of it, so you're welcome to go check me out. But there are basically two exemptions. And interestingly enough, they're both group exemptions. There is no individual exemption on my own conscience. It has to be a group exemption. One is a Social Security exemption. If you have the form 4029 filed, the Social Security exemption, you are not subject to the penalty, clearly. And I thought this was interesting. I don't know, and I, of course, haven't been around very long, but I don't know if any other piece of legislation that went through Congress that has built into it an exemption for the Anabaptist people. And I think that is something that we should be grateful to our government for, is these religious conscience exemptions. The second one is to be a part of a qualified sharing plan. So there's those two ways we can avoid the penalties, is by being Social Security exempt or being a part of a qualified plan, or have insurance. Or go read further down section D, E on. There are some other exemptions that I'm not going into. A qualified sharing plan, what is that? They define that quite well. It must be a 501c3 organization. Must be registered with the IRS as a 501c3 tax-exempt organization. Two, members must share common ethical and religious beliefs. Three, they must not discriminate membership based on state of residence or employment. Four, members cannot lose membership due to the development of a medical condition. Five, they must have existed and been in practice continually since December 31, 1999. And six, they must be subject to annual audit by an independent CPA, which must be publicly available upon request. And there are some sharing plans that cover this. I'm going to talk a little more about sharing plans later, I think. As I mentioned, there is no individual exemption. And also, if you notice, they have a date that's going to keep getting older and older. It's December 31, 1999. And also the group, or they must know the Mennonites and Amish. They said the group or the division must have started before 1950. So it's not like you can just start a new group. There's no provision for that. And there is already multiple legislations introduced to make that provision. One, just on April 26, H.R. 1814, was introduced. Actually, it was introduced last year, and they didn't get time for it, and introduced it again this year. but it has large bipartisan support, and it expands the exemption of the insurance mandate. In fact, I'll just quote what they say here. People could avoid the mandate by filing an affidavit as part of their tax return saying their religious beliefs keep them from buying insurance that meets federal standards. However, anyone filing this affidavit who then uses health care would lose their right to the exemption from the insurance mandate. So they just built that loss of status right in there. So you could be personally exempt, but if you used on conviction, but if you used it, you're not, don't have convictions. I guess I would say that I wouldn't go making a lot of plans of what I'm going to do right now, because it could change every 6 months. As legislation comes through, as different things happen. But I guess I think we, if possible, should try to find a way to be in compliance. There are several myths that I've heard about this act that have been put out there. I think we ought to just talk about it a little bit. I'm just going to present them as myths. That's what they are. You go look it up, study into it, research it. They are myths. Okay? One is that everyone under the government-issued insurance or from the exchanges, the subsidized insurance, is going to have a chip implanted in their right hand, and every child will be born under this program will have to have a chip. And they'll keep track of us. And also our bank accounts will be linked to it so they can just pull out the copays as they go. That is error. Actually, one of the earlier versions of the bill had the unembellished version of this. But it is not included. Also, another myth is that there's a special exemption for Muslims. Interestingly enough, they're referring to the exemption for Mennonites and Amish. And there's actually been some legislation introduced to take that out because of this, to counteract this loophole. And that's not saying there could be a very rare group that would have that. I'm going to speed here for a little bit. I'd like the organ health plan. You know, when we go into the hospitals here, and I suppose all your states have this, it's what's offered to you. I took my son into the emergency room. $900 for breathing treatment seems outrageous, but they said, well, here, you see if you qualify. That is a government subsidized insurance. Often hospitals won't look at other discount options until you apply for it. I don't think to say, well, I don't qualify because I'm Social Security exempt. I think that's circular reasoning. I think we need to be careful of that. We don't qualify that because we believe there's a better way. And another thing, organ health plan is another copy. And it is going to be phased out. We're working on phasing it out and using the cover organ to take it over, which is the cover organ is the Oregon State Exchange. And I looked up some other states. I'm not going to go into anything on them. Private insurance is sharing pool. It's a risk reduction. It's security. Insurance policies are acquired by the rich to protect their abundance and insulate themselves from the care of the poor. That's my definition of a insurance company. And There may be reasons people want to mitigate their risks. I understand that. Sharing plans. Many sharing plans are simply a copy of a copy. And we like the real. We want the authentic. And you know, the authentic is always worth more when you think of antiques. And so many of these sharing plans, they say, well, we want to have a sharing plan. And they'll put all the Bible verses at the top of their plan. And then they act exactly like an insurance, not like a sharing plan. And that's a copy of a copy. That's even further from the real. And I think we need to be careful. I think even when we get talking sometimes about brotherhood aid, we can get into this mentality and how to make everybody pay their fair share. Remember, a copy is always distorted. Some earmarks of a copy of a copy. Premiums. I realize an organized plan is going to have a share amount. But when the premium changes with the share changes with the risk, that's an insurance mentality. Pre-existing conditions. As brothers, we don't ignore people with difficult needs. It includes everyone. That's the thing with these sharing plans as a church. I'm not comfortable with that because we tend to say, well, they should have signed up for the plan. And maybe they couldn't afford it. I think it's a tragedy to develop something that leaves those out who are most in need. We think of the rich man and Lazarus. You know, Lazarus fared sumptuously the rich man fared sumptuously and Lazarus was begging. Until a day, there came a day and it said that, and Lazarus was comforted. And the rich man was in torment. And there was a great gulf fixed. And I believe that if we don't follow scriptural principles, we can create a great gulf between us and poor people. Can we handle the cost? The government has concluded that it costs about 12%. Sharing plans run about $325 a month or $4,000 a year. Both are assuming that you're going to have other out-of-pocket expenses of about $5,000 to $7,000. We can cover the cost. And I think we should appreciate the privilege we have of being able to do it this way. My question is not whether we can cover the cost, but whether we can afford to compromise. Can we afford a copy? Or are we going to stick with the real? The wealthy will pay more. Their fair share, as they say. We'll cover pre-existing conditions. There's no limits to what's covered. No one's exempt. But it's not a copy, it's the real. It's what Christ taught, practiced, and the church introduced. Paul said, 1 Corinthians 12:31, Yet show I unto you a more excellent way. He shows the doctrine of love, and I'm looking forward to hearing from Brother Peter this evening on that.